Once a month, we hear what it is like to live with mental illness. Our guides are the people of Southern Oregon Compass House in Medford. It's built on the clubhouse model of community mental health care. It is a place where people with persistent mental illness come together to support each other and their shared place. This month, we hear Susan's story. She has suffered with bipolar disorder for years with plenty of complications along the way. Susan shared her story with Remington Jarvie at Compass House.
I originally, in 72, moved to Portland, Oregon, did a lot of work there, high-level IT computer work. Then I was forced into early retirement. My husband's family was in Eugene, moved down there for 3 years. And most recently, I moved down here to Medford, and I am currently rooming with my best friend from seventh grade.
Cool. So you just kept heading south, huh?
Yeah, I figure in about another 3 or 4 years, I will be living in a shoebox somewhere in Northern California.
Okay. How old were you when you were diagnosed?
Oh, that's a good question. It was 6 years ago, so that would have made me 58.
How did it make you feel? What was that process like?
Well, my grandmother had been bipolar. And so I saw, as in my youth, I saw the progression of untreated bipolar. So I could see it in myself. And I finally started doing and thinking things, harming others plus harming myself, that frightened me. Mm-hmm. So I sought out mental health services for that.
Had that been going on a long time before you did?
Oh, yeah.
From an early age?
High school? It started way back in high school, yeah.
Okay, so you'd been dealing with this for a long time before.
Yes.
Do you feel like officially getting diagnosed helped you cope with it?
It did, in that I had been terrified of being diagnosed of what the mental health system would do to me. I was thinking more of the old school way of treating someone with a serious diagnosis, but I wound up with a very good counselor to start with, and she found a medication that worked right out of the box on me, and it's a low dosage. And I was also afraid, I didn't want to have the major ups and downs that I'd had, but I didn't want to just basically have my emotions flatline.
You said that you had been dealing with this since high school, so a long time before you even sought counseling. How did you cope with it from then until that moment? And then how has your coping changed since you were diagnosed and then even today?
Well, typical of bipolar, I've done research. It started out like a very low-grade fever, and it just gets worse and worse. More intense, I guess I should say. That sounds more politically correct. I would try to deal with it. I went through periods of time when I didn't, and I just kind of let it go free range. And then because I started in high school, and considering the part of the country I was living in, San Francisco in the 60s, marijuana was my friend. And then when I got over 21, well, marijuana was illegal, so I developed an alcohol problem. I was self-medicating quite a bit. A good part for me about being actively diagnosed is, since I had a medication that helped me just psychologically, in that then I realized that, okay, I need to quit drinking, except for maybe like a glass of wine with dinner. So I needed to quit self-medicating at that time. That took me several years to get over, because I was so used to, when I felt really high, I would drink to calm down, or smoke marijuana if somebody had some. And when I was really depressed, I would drink or smoke marijuana to try and as a mood enhancer.
So it sounds like, since you were diagnosed, your coping has changed. How has that changed your lifestyle or how people have perceived you?
Well, I lost a lot of friends when I quit drinking. I mean, seriously, like a bunch of us would go out on Friday after work, and this is up in Portland, Oregon, and we'd have a decent dinner, and then we'd go to a nice bar, and everyone would sit around and get plotzed. But then once I quit drinking as much, I noticed that we were having the same conversations each week, the same complaints about the same supervisors. It was getting boring, and the people in the group were becoming very uncomfortable by my lack of drinking. I was no longer a member of the group. Mm-hmm. So I quit attending it. So I lost a bunch of friends. I isolated myself a lot because I wasn't who I had been. I was now officially a bipolar person. And because of being in the traditional mental health system, I felt I was now bipolar. That's who I was. I was no longer an IT geek, a writer, an artist. I didn't want to do volunteer work because I wasn't me anymore. And I kind of kept to myself in the house and petted my cat a lot. Cats are wonderful. Because I didn't know who I was. Because I saw myself as a completely different person.
Right, so those unhealthy copings stopped, but the transition was difficult.
Yes.
To get through. What do you think most people don't understand about bipolar? Like, I don't have bipolar, and I think I know about it, but what's some misconceptions that I probably have?
Well, for some people, it is that, since it is one of the big diagnoses, people are afraid of people who have bipolar if they don't understand it. Hi, talk to one of us. We're not going to suddenly rip your throat out if we're in manic, and we're not going to try to destroy the world as suicide if we're really depressed. We are still people. We are still who we were before we were diagnosed. We just are dealing with different issues. Our brain chemistry is messed up. It is not a moral problem. It is not an ethical problem. That's really old-fashioned. And we still have just as much value as we did before you found out that we were bipolar. It's kind of a roller coaster ride sometimes as far as ups and downs of emotions, but if people would realize and go introspective on themselves, they would realize, well, they have days when they feel kind of up, and they have days when they feel low. What they need to realize is that's what a bipolar person does. Ours are just more intense. And that's what medication helps us to deal with.
Well, what advice would you give to someone that, I guess, if you look at different stages of your life, someone that's maybe dealing with it but hasn't got help, or someone who's recently got diagnosed, what encouragement or advice would you give them?
Find a counselor that you resonate with. And in all likelihood, you're going to have to go through several. But you're going to find someone that you just click. And go to that counselor and keep your appointments. And if you just haven't been diagnosed, but it's like, oh, I think that's me, find a counselor to start going to. And when you get medication, the most important thing I can stress, and any counselor or any other bipolar will probably tell you the same thing, is take your meds. You'll start feeling better after a while. And one of the big pitfalls, I have heard too many stories of bipolar people killing themselves or having a psychotic break because it's like, oh, hey, I'm feeling really great. I'm not having the real ups. I'm not having the real downs. I don't want to take that pill anymore. It's like, I'm also a diabetic and I've got medication I have to take. I'll take that medication for the rest of my life. I take bipolar medication. I'll take that for the rest of my life. And it's not a weakness that you have to deal with this. It's just, you just have to deal with what the hand you were dealt and get help.
That is Susan, our featured guest in this month's edition of Compass House, our joint venture with Southern Oregon Compass, that's Compass Radio. It's our joint feature with Southern Oregon Compass House in Medford. Susan talked to Remington Jarvie at the house, and the executive director of Compass House is with us once again, Elizabeth Hazelwood. Susan tells a great story and really lays it on the line. It's not a moral problem. It's not an ethical problem. Now, even when the rest of society seems like it's beginning to realize that, I just wonder how often it becomes an issue for people who are dealing with mental illness, though, to get to that point themselves.
It seems, at least to our members, that it feels like it's an everyday struggle. I was just talking to someone yesterday afternoon that said that they feel like they're judged based on their mental illness everywhere that they go.
And so with the fact that, there's the outside thing, but there's also the inside thing. So I'm just wondering if there are a fair number of people who put off dealing with, I mean, not just that they got misdiagnosed, but they decided not even to seek help for a long time because they just didn't want to get labeled that way.
Absolutely. There are people that recognize signs and symptoms and were so terrified they waited 10 years before going and getting it addressed. It comes with so much stigma. And when you first start feeling symptoms, it's terrifying. And you don't want that label. So a lot of people self-medicate. A lot of people try to deal with things themselves rather than facing the scary thought of getting a diagnosis.
Self-medication part. Now, Susan mentioned marijuana in her discussion, but it seems like other people turn to alcohol. I mean, is there any particularly reliable way to tell self-medication apart from just plain alcoholism or something?
It's challenging. It's somewhat, it's often a chicken and an egg. Dual diagnosis is extremely common with someone that has a mental health diagnosis as well as a substance abuse issue. The symptoms are the same in whether the root cause is the symptoms of the mental illness that caused someone to become addicted or if the addiction kind of came first and masked the mental illness symptoms, it's hard to tell.
Elizabeth, we have talked in the past about an approach for people who believe that somebody else is struggling, that for example, we shouldn't be afraid to ask people, are you thinking of harming themselves? You're not going to cause somebody to commit suicide by bringing this subject up. But in terms of approaching somebody who you think might be having with mental illness, is the approach the same, or do you recommend some different things to think about as you undertake this, if you choose to undertake it?
Compassion. All of us have a defense mechanism, which often comes out as anger. And so keep in mind, if you're addressing hard topics such as mental illness with someone that might not be ready to openly face that, that you may be met with some resistance and some anger, just such as if someone were to ask any of us about something that we felt uncomfortable about. And I think that it's incredibly important to talk through, well, how are you feeling? Have you talked to anyone like this? As opposed to making someone feel accused of something. It's all about caring and listening and then encouraging people to get help if they need it.
And don't come out of a place of anger, I'm sure, because, you know, the times I've heard people say things like, what's wrong with you? You bipolar or something? You know, that is not a way to approach the situation, I would think.
Not at all. And there are resources specifically for family and loved ones that help with that. NAMI is a fantastic resource, and they really work with families and loved ones because that in itself can be challenging, too, and having the support of people that have kind of been through it with a family member and a loved one, and that can be a support and a resource, is incredibly important.
NAMI is one of those places where their name turned into the acronym, right?
So yes.
They just refer to themselves as NAMI, N-A-M-I. It's NAMI.org, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So that used to be the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and services all over the place, and people scattered throughout Southern Oregon. We've talked to them before. How do the things that you do at Compass House then perhaps differ from something like NAMI or any other effort to help people dealing with mental illness and their families?
Well, we focus on strengths, talents, and abilities. Although all of our members have a diagnosed mental illness, that probably isn't going to come up in conversation or in the work that we do, because we want to provide a safe and compassionate environment where people don't focus on what's wrong with them. They focus on building what's right with them. And so if we have a conversation where someone's diagnosis comes up and they feel comfortable discussing it, that's great. But that's not what we're going to be focusing on. We're going to be focusing on, do you want to get a job? Do you want to get back to school? What are your goals? How can we help you?
So you're all there for the same reasons, but it is not about, let's all talk about mental illness all the time.
Absolutely. There are a lot of places, such as clinical services, where that is the focus, and that's what it needs to be. But also there's a need for something different, a place where you can just be you, and that's what we really work to strive and provide.
And how many people are members of the clubhouse now?
682 members, and on an average, 34 members come in every day.
Has that number grown, the 682?
Yes.
You probably saw my eyes get really big. It's
yes.
Like, wow, that seemed like it's about doubled since we first started dealing with you.
Absolutely. We have grown. We've gotten over 240 members just this year.
And are you fully moved into the new place yet?
Not yet. We're still working on it. We're about to break ground on the construction.
All right. More to come then from the folks at Southern Oregon Compass House in Medford, where Elizabeth Hazelwood is the executive director and the partners with us in Compass Radio. I want to thank again Susan for being our featured guest this month, and thanks to Remington Jarvie for doing the interview. A fine job on that. Thanks again so much from the folks at Compass House. Good to see you.
Thank you.